So we began the sugi here on Daf Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph, and the issue is a suffik in the Gemara, but the B'nai Beis HaMedrash did not exactly clarify what the suffik is. And the Gemara goes through various possible interpretations of what the suffik is. The original Ibailahu here on Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph was Shvach Samemonim Alatzema, Yesh or Ein. And basically what the Gemara is focused on is whether or not the Nigzal has a right to say to the Gazlan, you owe me for the Samamonim, you stole my Samamonim, and they no longer exist, you got to pay for that. And the Gemara raises the possibility that maybe the Shvach Samamonim are in the Tzemer. In other words, that even though the, you know, the Samamonim Lechora are no longer tangible, they've gone up in smoke, so to speak, but nevertheless, since the wool has absorbed that dye, that color, then in the wool itself there's been some sort of addition. The wool is no longer what it was before, and the Shvach of the Tzemer, and the fact that the Tzemer is now has been improved upon, is the Samamonim themselves, the dye itself. And here what we're up to is Elohoch b'mayaskinon de gozal tzemer. This is about halfway through the daf. De gomar de gozal tzemer v'samamonim dechad, that he stole not just samamonim, but he stole from the same person tzemer as well. And what did he do after stealing both objects? The samamonim, how do you call it in English? The drug, not the drugs, the
dyes.
Yeah, but I'm looking for a different word. The chemical object. Word am I looking for?
Ingredients.
No, but what do you call it that you know you make samamonim from? There's a general name for it. Okay, it'll come to me. In any event, so he stole both the samamonim and the tzemer. And what did he do? He put them into a cauldron, right? And he extracted, through the heating process, and in a liquid, he extracted the dye from the samamonim.
How about a pigment source?
Pigment source, okay. But I'm looking for a simple word.
I
mean,
open up
a sitter with an English translation, you know, to the Ktoris, and you'll see there's a word there for samamonim. Okay, fine. In any event, so he took these two together and he cooked them. V'tzave lahu tzemer b'hanach samamonim. So he dyed the very tzemer that he stole with the samamonim that he stole from the same person. So now it's a gazlan, he's returning the wool. So what's the Gemara suffix now? Yeshvach samamonim al gabi tzemer. Shall we say that when he returns the tzemer, he's returning not only the tzemer but also the samamonim? That's called yeshvach samamonim al tzemer. The kamahadolei, what he's returning to the nigzal is samamonim v'tzemer. Right, he's returning both, and therefore he no longer has any obligation to pay. So, in other words, even though he's actually returning one physical object, but that one physical object really represents two different objects. And even though the gzela was initially on two different objects, now he's basically combined those two objects. It's sort of like, imagine if somebody were to steal, you know, bread and cheese, and then make a you know, put it in a toaster oven and make it into a
melt,
you know, a melt, yeah, a tuna melt or whatever it is. So I return to you both, you know, both the bread and the cheese. It's one maisa shava, but it's really a double ashava on the two objects that I stole, correct? But that makes sense if you see the cheese. You know, if the cheese has completely disappeared, you know, where's the samamonim? There's no physical tangible samamonim. Oh, dilma ein shvach samamon al gabi tzemer. Then really, in effect, he's only returning tzemer komahadole, the samamon lo komahadole. He's not giving back the samamonim. The samamonim are non-existent. And maybe what we're saying is that since there was a gzela on the samamonim, and that gzela engenders a chiyuv hashava on the samamonim, then if the samamonim no longer exists, then basically he has to pay for the samamonim.
Cash.
cash. Now, you could always ask the question that we raised last time, and that is, well, why wasn't the Gazlan Kona the Samamonim Bashinui? Right? He's converted the Samamonim into a die. That itself should be Machayvim Kishas Hagzela. Okay, I'm not going to review what we discussed last time in the name of Meir Simcha Midvinsk for anybody who remembers. But in any event, even if he wasn't Kona Bashinui, he still has a Chiyuv Hashava. And the Chiyuv Hashava means, in this case, that if he cannot return the object itself, he's got to return its value. He's got to pay Domin. That's what we have over here. Now, if you recall, Rabosai, initially, the Gemara at the top of Daf Kuf Aleph on the days said that Hechi Domin, perhaps the case is that he stole some Monim, Vidakinu Usranu Vitzavim, that he crushed them and grinded them, and he took this kind of a floury substance, flour, F-L-O-U-R, right, and he soaked it in water, and he made a dye out of it. The question that I wanted to raise with you is, now that the Gemara has rejected the previous, shall we call it, Ukimta, and understanding of the suffering of the Gemara, can we now go back and reformulate the case as it was initially? Meaning, he didn't steal the dye, he stole the Samamon. And apparently, this is the subject of the Marsha's discussion here. You see, there's a second Tosis here, Tosis Div Maskil Dezil. We'll get to that a little bit later, Dezol. But the Marsha makes a comment there that's relevant already to us. And he says, Nitan Lahamid Biofen Shegazal Samimonim Veshachak Osam. He says that even though he stole Samimonim and therefore he was Kona Veshinui, but nevertheless, he could still be Makayim, the din of Tashlume Samamonim, if you hold Yesh Shvach Samamonim Al Gabi Tzemer. Do you hear the chaf of the Marsha? Now, the significance of the Marsha is twofold. We'll see the halachic significance of the Marsha's Chiddush in just a minute, but in terms of Shakla Vitaria, which I'm always interested in seeing how the Gemara develops its logical progression, what he's saying is that since the Gemara rejected the original Kimta, in which he stole Samamonim, pure Samamonim, and substituted instead that he stole Dai, meaning after Samamonim were already processed, but the Gemara's not happy with that, because if that be the case, the Gemara says then, well, let him take back the Samamonim, right? Let him take back the Samamonim. And the Gemara, if you remember, says, well, how can he take back the Samamonim? Is there really a process in which he can extract the dye from the wool? Now the Gemara says, Ella Hachavamayaskina, and that's the Gemara that we started today. He says the Marsha, the word Ella is very significant. Because what Ella allows us to do is to reject the second Ukimta and resurrect the first Ukimta. So we can go back to the original understanding that the case that the Gemara was vacillating about was a case where he stole Samamonim. He actually stole Samamonim. You'll ask me, if he stole Samamonim, then let him be Kona Vishinui, and then ipso facto he's got to pay for the Samamonim Kishas Akzela. The answer is, says the Marsha, that if you hold Yeshvach Samamonim Al Gabi Tzemer, and the Samamonim still exist in the Tzemer itself, then when he returns the Tzemer, he's also returning the Samamonim. And therefore there's no Chiv to pay Domim. So the Marsha now has a halachic breakthrough here. In terms of the Shakla Vitaria, it's wonderful. You know, the Ella allows me to, so to speak, resurrect from the dead the original Kimta that he stole Samamonim. But the Marsha also has halachic significance, and he's understanding that to what extent are we maintaining Yeshvach Samamonim al Gavit Tzemer Komahadule Samamonim Vitzemer, that he's returning both Tzemer and Samamonim, to the extent to which we can completely null and void the principle of Gazel and Kona Bishinu. And it means like this. We have two principles here. We have one principle called Yeshiva Sakzela Sher Gazal, and we have another principle called Yeshla Gazal Kinyan Vishinui Umesham Tisha Sakzela. Are these two separate, independent Chiyuve Ashova? Meaning, one Chiyuve Ashova demands that I return the actual object that was stolen. That's called Yeshla Sakzela Sher Gazal. And there's another Chiyuv HaShova, almost as a different road, so to speak, a different pathway, and that is a Chiyuv HaShova of Domim Kishas HaGzela if he was Meshana the object. So if he's Meshana the object, the first approach, which is Veshas HaGzela Shar Gozal, doesn't apply anymore. It's no longer feasible because he made a change to the object, so he can't return the object. But on the other hand, the Torah now gives him a different hashava, and that hashava is to pay damim. And even if the first mechanism doesn't operate, it's ineffective because you can't say mechanisms like gzela shel gazal when the gzela is no longer there. He was kona b'shinui, but now I can dump that and substitute an entirely different mechanism to replace the first, and that is that a gazel is kona b'shinui. Now he's a chiyuv to pay Domim Kishas HaGzela. Says the Mashon, no. It doesn't work like that. The only way that a Gazlan could be obligated to pay Kishas HaGzela through Shinui is if it's impossible for him to fulfill the Eishav HaGzela Shem Gozal. But if Lu Yitzuyer, you could have A and B, your cake and eat it too. You can have at the same time Eishav HaGzela Shem Gozal, at the same time Kona B'Shinui, then there would be no din of Mishan Kishas HaGzela because he can still latch on to the opportunity of fulfilling Veshav HaGzela Sher Gazal. The fulfillment of Hashava, says the Marsha, replaces the din of Gazal Mishan Kishas HaGzela. When do we say Gazal Mishan Kishas HaGzela? That's only when through his Shinui he has blocked any possibility of being Mekayev Veshav HaGzela Sher Gazal. But if Lu Yitzuyer, despite the Shinui, he could fulfill the dictate of the Eishiv V'Sagzela Sher Gazal, then there's no din of Mishan Kishas HaGzela. And the Nafkamina is going to be if you hold Yesh Shvach Samamon V'Tzemer, which means that when he returns to the Tzemer, he's giving back what? Samamon. And then he fulfills the din of Hashava of Eishiv V'Sagzela Sher Gazal. Basically, what I'm giving you is the Samamon. And that's fascinating because what do you mean I'm giving you the samamonim? The samamonim were herbs, you know, in the natural state. Those don't exist anymore. All you have is the dye. So definitely he was kind of machinery. Let him pay for the samamonim. The answer is no. Because since I hold yesh shvach samamonim b'tzemer, the tzemer now contains within it the samamonim. And therefore I can be makayim my chiyuv hashava vis-a-vis both heftzes, both objects, namely both the tzemer that I stole and the samamonim that I stole, and therefore the other principle of gazlan kone b'shas gazlan kone u'mishan b'shas exil is no longer enforced. It's no longer activated because that principle is only going to be activated if and when the first principle of eishav exil shel gozal is suspended. Great. So now the Gemara says the following. You're right. In a sense, if the tzemer went up in value, appreciated as a result of this process of dying, that's great. That's great. Then you can say and argue that when he returns, when the gazlan returns the tzemer is worth 10, and let's say the samamonim are worth 3, and now that the tzemer has been dyed, it went up in value from 10 to 15. When he, the gazlan, returns that tzemer to the nigzal, he's giving him something worth 15, which goes even beyond the combination of A plus B of tzemer plus sum of money. And if that be the case, Amri says the Gemara, Tepakle diyakir le niyale bedomi. Even if I grant you, here's the Gemara's chiddush, listen to this. Even if I grant you that ein shvach samamonim al gabi tzemer, it doesn't matter. Ein shvach samamonim al gabi tzemer means that he's not returning the samamonim, the gazel's not returning, fine. So what's the nigzel saying to him? He's saying, pay me for the samamonim. Then the gazel has the right to say, I did pay you for the samamonim. Because what are the samamonim worth? 3. I just gave you back something that's worth 15, 10 plus 5. And the 5 represents the increment in the value of the tzemer as a result of the dying process. So you have your payment. And this is a gevaldig chiddush in this Gemara. You know, sometimes you read a kash in the Gemara and you assume that the premise upon which the question is predicated is a simple premise. It's not a simple premise. There's a great chiddush in this premise. And the chiddush of this premise is that as far as Hashav is concerned, the damim, the value, the money, you know, the cash value determines Hashav.
Shasak Zela value?
No, he's going even further than that. He's saying, forget about Shasak Zela. Right now, I am giving you the value of the sum, one in plus. Again, the plus is not important for us, but what I'm just saying is that the Nigzal is receiving the entire value of the sum of money. But the samamonim per se, if you hold ein shvach samamonim pas, are completely gone. Why doesn't the nigzal, and I'm fighting here with the premise of the makshan, why doesn't the nigzal have a right to say to the gazlan, look, with all due respect, where are my samamonim? The Torah says, v'eishim like zel asher gazal. Correct? And you therefore have not fulfilled your chiyuv hashava. Nay, the Gemara says, I reject that. He has fulfilled his. The argument of the Nigzal is not a valid argument. The Gazan has the upper hand because he's arguing, I have fulfilled my Chiyuv HaShov. Where did you fulfill his Shova? If there was some of them are gone, ain't Shvach, some of them b'tzemer. The answer is that the Vehashim HaGzela Shar Gazal could be fulfilled in one of two ways. Either by returning the object or by returning its value. And the damim, the value of the object, is a legitimate way of fulfilling Hashava. And this Rabosa reminds me of the famous chiddush of Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim was wondering whether a gazlan is chayev malchus or not. So the Rambam writes that the gazlan is not chayev malchus. Why? Because we have a principle that a lav hanitan l'tashlumin is not mechayev malchus. I'm sorry. Let me start slowly. We'll get to Reb Chaim in a minute. There's a principle called a lav hanitak l'esei. Lav hanitak l'esei. So here in the case of gzeil, it says lo sigzol, and then it says what? They should like gzeil shem gazal. So that makes it into a lav hanitak l'esei. So the problem, which the objection which is raised on this halach in the Rambam is, well, that makes sense if the object is still in existence. But if the object is destroyed, then there's no possibility for affiliation with like Zeila Shar Gazal, and therefore it's no longer Lav Anitak Liese. I mean, you have to know the sugya and makis about what happens if you destroy the possibility of fulfilling the essay. We paskin bitlo velo bitlo, like Rav Yochanan. So that means if, let's say, a man takes the fledgling birds and then he subsequently sends away the mother, so he gets malchus for that. He gets malchus for that if he destroys the mother bird. If he shechts the mother, that's called bitlo, meaning we give him two choices. You know, either you can postpone your fulfillment of the essay indefinitely, and we can't give you malchus because you always have, so to speak, the option, the opportunity to fulfill the essay. Or you can destroy the essay. And if you destroy the essay and make it impossible to fulfill the essay, like, for example, he shechts the mother bird, then we'll give him malchus. So the question is, if the gazlan destroyed the object, or let's say even in Shinui, I don't know, you have to know, then there's no longer a possibility of a Hashem's Exel Shal Gazal, and that's called Bitol HaEsei. If he was Mavatul HaEsei, he should get Malchus. So Reb Chaim answered that the Hashem's Exel Shal Gazal could be fulfilled in one of two ways. If the object is Be'en, it's still in existence, intact, then he has to return the object itself. But if, on the other hand, the object has been destroyed, then he has another way of fulfilling the essay, and that's through Damin. The money is itself a replacement of the object. So I say that Reb Chaim, if we plug it in here, will be very good. Because the Gemara's premise is that when he returns the Tzemer and the Samamonim are gone, he has fulfilled his obligation of Hashava. And we ask the question, what do you mean he fulfilled the obligation of Hashava? There's no Samamonim here. So what is Gemara asking? He gave him a price hike by giving him not only 3 zuzim for his Samamonim, he gave him 5 zuzim for his Samamonim, because that's the increase in the value of the Tzemer. That was Gemara's kasha. So meaning the Gemara is saying that even if I hold that Ein Shvach Samamonim B'Tzemer, nevertheless the Gazlan should still have a right to claim I have fulfilled my obligation of Hashem by giving you back the Tzemer that's now appreciated in value. So we ask the question, so what? Okay, it appreciated in value, but what's about the Samamonim? He stole Samamonim. And if you recall, the Marsha says he may have stole pure natural Samamonim. Yeah, what do they call it in the health shops? You know, when you give, you know, when you have something in its natural state, what do they call it? You know, it hasn't been processed at all. What's it called?
Raw.
Yeah, no, but there's a word, you know, that there's some people who don't want, because they think that all the vegetables and the fruits that we buy, they've all been, you know, with the pesticides, and they've been processed in the chemicals. Organic, right. Yeah. You have to return organic Samamonim, right? And he doesn't have organic Samamonim to return. So why does Gemara assume in his kasha, the predicate of this kasha is that when he gives back the tzemer, which is increased in its value, he has fulfilled his chiyuv hashava. But according to Rav Chaim, it's very good, because Rav Chaim says the chiyuv hashava can be fulfilled in one of two ways: either by returning the organic object, or by returning its value in cash. All right. Lo tzricha, says the Gemara, dissolved tziva. Very strange. The value of dyed wool has depreciated in the market. You know, people are into organic wool. Nobody wants to buy processed wool. So Rashi has a whole long presentation over here. Rashi says, Tzemer tzavua huzal ba'olam. So far, so good. V'ein magiyim shvach lidmei samamonim. And the difference in value between the tzemer as it was raw and the tzemer as it is dyed is not equivalent to the value of the samamonim. So Rashi should have quit while he was ahead, I would say. And this is what Rabbi Kivega is going to go wild about. Instead, Rashi gives the whole ganze spiel. Rashi says, the omer le nigzal. The nigzal has a right to turn to the gazlan and say, Ani ayisi mocher samamonim. Right? I would have sold the samamonim on the open market, and I would have gotten 3 zuzim for my samamonim. Now you're giving me tzemer that sells for 10, so I've lost my 3 zuzim for the samamonim. Oh, ayisi tzoveh beged. Oh, I would have dyed with these samamonim and beged and sold it when the price of dyed wool was high. The achshav, but now, hivsaditani. What did you do? You held on. You stole my dye, you've dyed my tzemer, lo ishbicha tzemer, the tzemer itself did not go up in value, and therefore I lost that possible profit that I could have earned had I either A, sold the samamonim, or B, dyed my tzemer and then sold the appreciated tzemer at that point in time when it was dyed, and therefore you've caused me a loss. So if you take a look in the Gilyan Hashas over here, this long, unusually, atypically long Rabbi Kivager here, he's not a happy camper with this Rashi. And he thinks that Rashi added something that was totally unnecessary. And we could have interpreted this Gemara, Bepashtus, that now the value of Samamonim have decreased, have depreciated. The Afshein Yochlan Nigzal Liton Shayamokram Kais, even though the Nigzal is not coming forward to claim, well, I would have sold it, right? Nevertheless, Sof Kol Sof, HaGazlonim Mishalmim Kishasak Zela. Do we have a principle that a Gazlan has to pay Kishasak Zela? So let's say the Gazlan stole some of money when they were worth 3, and now they go down in value. is Eino Yochel Lipoter B'Shovi HaSamamonim Kimosh HaShovim Ka'es. In other words, it's already engraved in stone that from the moment he stole these Samamonim, he would have to pay the value of the Samamonim. Unless he returns and he says, Harei Shal Kol Fanecha, right? You remember the Mishnah back on Tzadi Gimel about somebody who steals Chametz and then he returns it after Pesach, or he steals Chulin and they become Truma and so forth and so on. He always has a right to say, Harei Shal Kol Fanecha. So if the Samamonim is still intact, fine. The Gazlan has a claim, Harei Shal Kol Fanecha. But if the Samamonim are gone, then he has to pay Kishas like Zela. And since the Samamonim were worth 3 Zuzim at the time of the Gzela, now he's giving back 7 that's worth 10, which is wonderful, but doesn't offset the value of the Samamonim. Why does Rashi feel compelled to give us this whole long presentation about the fact that the Nigzal is going to say, well, I would have sold it at its original price when it was high, I would have this, I would have that. Leave that all out. So the question is, can we offer some sort of explanation and justification? What compelled Rashi? What was bothering Rashi? You know, somebody wrote a book, I think, on Rashi al-Torah called What Bothered Rashi? Is there such a book?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's basically what you have to do. In every Rashi, you have to ask yourself, what bothered Rashi? Rashi never tells, or rarely tells us his question. Kemat never tells us his question. He always just answers it, and he assumes you know the question. Sometimes the interpretation of Rashi will shift whether Rashi was bothered by question X or by question Y. There are different ways of learning Rashi. So I was thinking the following. What is going on over here? Rashi is saying that the Nigzal has a taina because he could have sold it at the higher value. The question is the following. Rabbi Kivega's claim is that the Gazlan should pay Kishas HaGzela. It seems to me that principle that Rabbi Kivega is activating, that a Gazan has to pay Kishas HaGzela, which means he has to pay the Samamonim when they were high on the market, they were worth 3 Zuzim, that applies in a case where it's not Be'en. So let's say, for example, if a Gazan is Kona B'Shinui, so we have that rule that he pays Kishas HaGzela. Correct. So Rabbi Kivega is arguing here that since we're holding now that ein shvach samamonim al gavit semer, and therefore the samamonim is not be'en, in such a case, he automatically has to pay kishas hagzela. And if that be the case, why does Rashi have to give his whole explanation? But perhaps we could say that every time we activate the principle of a gazlan paying kishas hagzela, correct? You could always ask the following question. Well, I'm just putting words into the mouth of the Gazlan here, you know, sort of like the devil's advocate. The Gazlan could say, well, wait a second. You want to be mechayev me for what? You want to be mechayev me for the act of gzeil, correct? You want to be mechayev me for the act of gzeil. But, just 1 second, let me see if I can formulate this. But since the act of gzeil, right. Remember we said before that Veheshev is like Zela is a two-stage process. Right? Stage number one is return the object. Stage number two, if you cannot return the object, return its value. Correct? So Rashi wants to define why is it that Veheshev is like Zela Shargazal now, you know, we fast forward it and we project it in a way that even if the object is not there to be returned, the Torah is still obligating you in Hashavas HaDamim. Rashi's looking for a certain link here that allows me to jump from stage one to stage two. In other words, legalgel, you know, to convert the Chiv Hashavas HaBe'en into a Chiv Hashavas HaDamim. And Rashi suggests the following. I don't believe that Rashi means for one moment that the Nigzal is saying, oh, I would have sold it on the market, or I would have dyed my wool, you know, with it. What happens if the Nigzal, let's say Chas V'Shalom, was in a coma for the last year? I don't know what. Or he was out there. That's not what Rashi means. Rashi is trying to make a conceptual point over here. that the chiyuv of gazlan is not limited to undo the maisa gzela, but rather the chiyuv of the gazlan expands to undo any sort of hefsed that he caused to the nigzal. And Rashi is not saying that the nigzal actually would have sold it on the market. That's irrelevant. But the very fact that the nigzal could have sold it on the market means that that maisa gzela was not just an action that was related to the object in its original form, but to its value as well. Do you follow what I'm saying? That we can go from concrete to abstract. You know, we can look at the object as a concrete object, you know, it's tangible, it's physical, and then we can look at the shavius of the object, its value. I'll give you a mashal. Mashal ma'adovid domeh, that if a person takes upon himself a neder, to bring this table to Hegdesh and give it to the Bedek Abayis, if he cannot do so, he's going to have to pay its value. Mm-hmm. Meaning, this physical table, it represents two different things, and they're both considered the same. One is the physical, you know, electrons, and then, you know, the anatomical structure of the table as a physical object. And it also represents its value in abstract terms on the market. So if a person takes upon himself Hegdesh, that Hegdesh is what's called Kedushas Damim. It's not just the Kedusha as in Kedushas Mizbeach, which is related to the Behema, not beyond the Behema. Here, in the case of Kedushas Damim, the object is nothing more than a manifestation of its value, of its Shavius. Could be in Kedusha Isha, that also applies. That when a man is Mekadosh an Isha with a Shavah Pruta, it's not the Cheftza Shel Kedushin is the object as it represents a value. And that's why Shavah Kesef Ki Kesef. Says Rashi, the very fact that the Nigzal could theoretically have sold the Samamonim or benefit from the Samamonim by selling them after dying at Tzemer at the high value, that proves that the original object is not just a physical object, but it represents a certain value, which in theory the Nigzal could have cashed in on that value. So that the Mechayev of Gazlan is not just Veheshiv is like Zelish or Gazal in terms of the Be'en, the original tangible object, but whatever is represented by that tangible object. Rashi wants to show you that the halacha that you have to pay for the value of the object is built into the original Maisik Zela. The original Maisik Zela engenders a twofold chiyuv. Stage number one is to return the object, but stage number two is, even if the object is not there, what does the object represent? It's a physical manifestation of what? Its value. That's called in Hebrew shavius.
And that's what Rashi calls shasek zela. Shasek zela is what it would be worth when I want to sell it later on.
No, what I could have sold it for at the time of the zela.
Oh, so there's nothing to Rashi talking about what I could have sold it for now.
No, now I think it went down in value.
No, that's no, no.
Did I misunderstand the Rashi?
I understood the Gemara that the dalt sivya means a die beg, it's semer tzavua, doesn't say the die itself went down. The die could have gone up 100-fold. But the die beg, it went down in value in the marketplace. That's what I understood.
And that's not going to impact on the value of the sum of money? You mean you could actually separate the two? It's a little bit strange, because I always understood the sum of money have one function, but maybe they're multifunctional, and I'm making a mistake. I always thought that the value of the sum of money is a reflection of the fact that it can be converted into a dot. Maybe it has other values. I don't know, maybe you could cook with it, maybe you could, you know, make taurus out of it, maybe you could make other drugs, you know, trufot out of it, I don't know what. But if you'll grant me one premise, namely that the Samamonim themselves could have been sold at that high price at the time of the Gzela, and Rashi is saying that the hefsed you caused me is because you stole my Samamonim, and now I don't have access to the Samamonim, I can't either sell them per se on the sum of money market, or I can't sell them as a die which increased and embellished the value of the tzemer, that you caused me that loss of 3 zuz. 3 zuz being the value of sum of money on the market at the time of this. Now Yechiel is saying that Rashi means something totally different, that today he could sell the sum of money.
But I'm not sure I mean that, but I want to.
I don't know. If you're right, then everything I told you is.
What bothers me is that Rashi is. On one hand, the Gemara is talking about the value of the dyed wool is gone down in the wool, but why should that matter? In other words, if the person has the right to argue that I could have sold some money in its pure, you know, organic state at the time of the Gzela, and you've stolen that right from me, why should it matter whether the Tzavua Beged is worth, you know, more or less, or...
No, you feel, again, what the Gemara is trying to salvage here is the following. Can the Gazlan be justified in his claim that I am giving you back the sum of money? In what form? In the form of the increased value on the market of the Tzemer. So the Gemara says, well, wait a minute. You might argue, and that was the Gemara's kasha, that even if I hold Ein Shvach Sam Amonim B'Tzemer, but nevertheless B'Toris HaShova, I'm giving him back something that's worth 15. That was Gemara's kasha. So Niman of Shach, the Gazlan is in the clear, and he's off the hook because he's giving him back, if not the Sam Amonim themselves, because they don't exist anymore, he's giving back its Domim. And that itself is a key of HaShova Sagzeh, as we discussed.
I appreciate it.
Oh, so the Gemara now turns around and says, but wait a minute. Your premise, Mr. Makshon, is that the value of the Sam Amonim is now swallowed up in the Tzemer because the Tzemer has increased in value. But what are you going to tell me if nobody's buying colored Tzemer anymore? Oh, says Rashi, Enochinami, if the Sam Amonim are gone, Rabbi Kivega is right, let him pay Kishas HaGzela. So Rashi asks himself the question, what do you mean pay himself a Kishas HaGzela? The object is not there anymore. So where's the Veheshivas HaGzela Shargozal? So Rashi says, nay, you're going to have to argue the Veheshivas HaGzela Shargozal takes on a new spin. You know, we upgrade it to a new level, and you have to return, if not the Be'en that you stole, at least its value. So Rashi says, why is that so? What gives the Gemara the right to make that jump and assume that the Veheshiv is like Zelash or Gozal takes me that one step further, and now Domin becomes his Chiyuv HaShova? And Rashi says, because what did he steal? The answer is he stole two things, so to speak. It's really one. But he stole the physical Be'en, and he stole its monetary value. It's almost as if, let's say, you would pay an accountant to determine what's your total assets. So he would take, number one, your bank account and your stocks, and he would also take the physical possessions that you own. Right? So that's also an asset because you can sell it on the market. So Rashi wants to be mechadish that when the Nigzal says to the Gazal, well, I could have sold these sum of money, meaning when you stole these sum of money, you're stealing not only the physical sum of money, which you cannot be obligated to fulfill because Hanari Nenu, but you also stole from me that asset of what I could have sold the sum of money for on the market. Now you're Yechiel claiming, well, why is Rashi telling me that right now I could have sold the sum of money on the market for 3? I don't know. I'm not sure. You may be right, but I'm not sure if that has to, let me just think whether that has to torpedo what we said. Again, since you're telling me that now it's, I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe
I'm not sure that I'm right.
Maybe that undermines what I said. I'm not sure. I think our logical defense for Rashi in abstract terms makes sense. Okay. You're raising a very important technical problem. I don't know how to solve it right now, but I think that Rashi wants to focus on the loss that the Nigzal Abala Sam Amonim suffered. And he demonstrates that loss by Tachlis, he could have sold the sum of money. Now, I'm not sure if it means now or then or what, but Rabbi Kivega's argument is who needs that whole shtickel Torah? Leave it out. You know, call it Mosif Gorea. Because since it's halacha of Gazla Mishan Kshas Akzela, then obviously he has to return the value of the sum of money. Who cares whether he could sell it, he couldn't sell it, it's a hefsid or not a hefsid. So I was trying to suggest that Rashi is giving us a deeper insight into this very fundamental premise that a Gazan could be held responsible for the value of the object, even if it no longer exists. And Yovel Baldin Viachlo, somebody will come along and say, Mehechatesi, who gave you the right to assume within the context of the Chiyuv HaShova as formulated by the Torah of Exeter Gozal, that the Gazan is responsible for the monetary loss that's represented by his Gzela, maybe he's only responsible for the physical object. And that's where Rashi comes up with his Chiddush, that the physical object is really a representation of its value. It's not just the table itself. You know. Okay. In any event, that we move on, and the Gemara says the following, that you now have a very valid way of explaining the Safek in the Gemara. If I hold Yeshvach Samamonim Al Gabi Tsemer, and the Samamonim are still there. Sikim Kayim his Hashavah by giving back the Tsemer, which has the Samamonim in the Tsemer. If I hold on the other hand, Ein Shvach Samamonim Tsemer, then there's Halacha that says that if you're not returning the Samamonim, then you're Chayven Hashavah's Domim, and if the value of the Tsemer does not in any way reflect the value of the Samamonim, because it went down in value, but nobody's buying Kol and Dayim the garments, then the Gazan would have to pay for the sum of money. So we have a valid approach to this stuff. But now the Gemara says, Ibois Ema. And it's very interesting. The Gemara is not satisfied. You know, this is what I call Yosef. Yosef means I want to go beyond. You know, the Gemara wants to give, the Gemara is very wealthy and very rich. It wants to give you another way, another opportunity, alternative way of understanding the original suffix. So the Gemara says, Kigon Shetzava Bahu Kofa. Now this part of the Gemara, which I call the pre-Ravina part, I can understand. Once Ravina steps in, we're going to have a lot of trouble. But before Ravina, what the Gemara means to say, I believe, is that we don't have to suggest that that there was an increase in value or a decrease in value. You leave that all out. But what happens here? The Gazlan, just one second. The Gazlan used the die, right? Used the die for something that does not in any way increase the value of the object. Meaning, up until the Sibayis Ema, we thought that, wait a minute, if the value of the tsemer increases through the dyeing process, then in a certain sense the gazlan has done a tova, so to speak, for the nigzal, because now when he returns the tsemer, the nigzal gets not only his tsemer, but he also gets something even more than the tsemer. But what happens if the gazlan takes this sabamonin, which he stole, and he uses it to dye something which doesn't go up in value? The Gemara gives the example of a kof. I guess monkeys are sold for their value when they look red, black, or blue. You know, dyeing, you know, some people dye their hair. You know, I think, David, I once told you I ran a summer scheme for the British kids in Mevaseret Tzion. And the reason I stopped it after a few years was because one of my young, great British 16-year-olds, you know, decided to dye his hair red, and the parents in England held us responsible. Why didn't we prevent him from doing so? You know, so that created a whole hullabaloo back in England. And at the end, the British decided, you know, we're going to fight this program and so forth. So I dropped. It wasn't worth it for me to keep it wasn't a money making program. It was an all of my bar making program. I'll tell you why. Because a lot of the British kids, after they finish what's called the O-levels of the first exams? 16, the O-levels. Yeah. After they finish the O-levels, they get, I think, a three-week break.
Yeah.
And the British boys do whatever they do during that break. I wanted to offer them a possibility of coming to Eretz Yisrael and learning Torah. So, P.S., one of the boys who was in my program is now a Magid Shir in Gush Etzion. Okay? Not the one who died. Good question, David. Okay, that was very sharp. So anyway, I don't regret it, but I do regret that this boy dyed his hair, because that... So a person who dyes his hair, or even if he's a monkey who dyes his hair, apparently is not worth more on the market. I think if I had a circus, maybe a red monkey would be worth a little bit more. I don't know.
How do you hold a monkey in the boiling water for 3 days?
Yeah, I guess you have to wait till it cools off a little bit. Otherwise, you're going to kill the monkey. So in any event, so this guy stole a monkey. He stole the Balakov's Samamonim. And now he dyes the monkey. So if that be the case, the monkey has not gone up in its value. So if I hold Ein Shvach Samamonim Al Gabi Tzemer, and the Gazan has to pay for the Samamonim. But if on the other hand I hold Yesh Shvach Samamonim B'Tzemer, so when he returns the monkey, right, and the monkey now has the dye in its body, I guess you'd say, so then So just say, so when he returns the monkey, right, did I get this right? When he returns the monkey, he's Memeli's return the sum of money. I think I got that right. Let me just see if he says anything differently. He said, L'tzacha ain't shvach sum of money, gabi etzemer, chayim v'gazel. Okay, he doesn't tell you this, but you can look in your commentaries and see if they reflect what I said, that if you hold yesh shvach sum of money b'tzemer, is therefore when he returns the monkey, he's returning the sum of money as well. Ravina wants to suggest that the suffix in the Gemara about whether Yeshvach Samamonim al Gabi Tzemer or Ein Shvach Samamonim et Tzemer is B'Hachmai Eskin is the case of Kigon the Tzemer Dechad V'Samamonim Dechad. So he stole wool from Reuven and he stole Samamonim from Shimon. Now here's where the going gets rough for me here, if you guys can help me out here.
Rashi says,
okay, Vika'asi, okay, so it's not Gzela, okay, so this Tzemer belongs to one person, and Samamana belongs to someone else. Vika'asi Kof, Vitzave Lahu Tzemer, Bahanach Samamana. They're very talented. This is Curious George, I guess, right? So he dies so-and-so's semer with the other person's samimonim. Is yeshvach samimonim al gavit semer? Di omar le havli samonai digabach ninhu. So the owner of the samimonim could demand from the owner of the semer that he return the sum of monim, because he's got the sum of monim in the tzemer. And if he can't return the sum of monim, that he's got to return
money.
He's got to return its domim. Okay, that's called yeshvach sum of monim al gavi tzemer. So again, the advantage here is Rashi says it's not gzela. So if it's not gzela, then it's all a question of returning something that belongs to some. I mean, it was the monkey who's responsible here for. If anyone's the goslin, it's the monkey. So, but nobody's suing the monkey, I guess. I know it's a monkey of Hefka. I don't know exactly how. Oh, Dilma, ein shvach samamonim al gabi tzemer, v'amale loch gaboy, less loch gaboy klum. In other words, the owner of the tzemer turns to the owner of the samamonim and he says, I'm not holding on to anything of yours. You know, you can't tell me I stole it from you because it was the monkey who did it. And you can't tell me I'm holding on to your samamonim because the samamonim are gone. So again, what Ravina wants to gain here, if I understand correctly, is that we want to circumvent gzela here. If it was gzela, then lechora, if the... Right, even if I say that the samamonim are gone and ein shvach samamonim, etc., but still your tzemer has now been appreciated in value. So therefore, I can be mekayem my chiyuv hashavah by returning you the tzemer that's appreciated in value, and that more than offsets the loss of the samamonim. Says Ravina, I can avoid that whole mess in which it was clear to the Gemara, according to both tzadim, that the gazlan is potter because he's giving back the tzemer, by introducing a third element here, and there's no gzela here. So if there's no gzela, everything reduces to, the whole issue reduces to one and only one question. Can you claim, give me back my sum of money? If the sum of money are still tangible, they still exist, Rashi says, chazusa milsa, if you remember, then the bala sum of money could demand the return of his sum of money. If on the other hand, again, and if he can't return the sum of monim, obviously he returns the value of the sum of monim. If on the other hand I hold yeshvach sum of monim, right? No, just one second. No, just the other way around. If I hold yeshvach sum of monim, so then you can demand your sum of monim. If I can't cough up your sum of monim, right? No boris or tzofon will do that job, then I have to pay you its value. If on the other hand I hold ein shvach sum of monim, so mimana shakam poter. Why? If you're going to tell me I should be chayv b'toras gazlan, well, I didn't steal it. Elo, what, you're going to tell me that your sum of money are in my possession? They're not my possession because ain't shvach sum of money b'tzemer. Toshma. Oh. Mabosai, now it gets exciting. Okay, this is the part I like. Now, just by way of introduction to a little bit of Zeroyim, the Torah says in Parashas Kedoshim, V'chisavo el ha'aretz. That's a very tricky phrase, because it sounds like it's Mitzvah Satvios for Aretz, but we know that Orla applies even in Chutz Laretz. It's the only part of Zeroyim that applies in Chutz Laretz on a Doraisa level. That's called Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. But in the pasuk itself, it says ki savo al haaretz unetatem kol eitz machol varaltem or losa espirio shalosh shanim yielachem arelim lo yeyochel. Now there are a couple of things about this pasuk that we should point out. First of all, the word is lo yeyochel. Yeyochel, as opposed to yochal, indicates an iser hano. This is a sugya in Masechta Pesachim. On Daf Chav Beis, the famous sugya of Chizki and Rabbi Avo, if you're familiar, at the beginning of the second parak of Pesachim, and everybody agrees that if it doesn't say Achila v'loshen lo sochal, but it says lo ye achel in a reflexive grammatical form, then everybody agrees that echad iser achila v'echad iser anor b'mash. So therefore, I submit to you right up front, which is going to be a problem in a minute, that all is also by virtue of the pasuk lo ye ochel. In truth, the Gemara is going to have a different drasha to derive and establish the Isra Anor in Orl, and that's going to be a problem. But number two, what I want to point out to you up front is that the word Orla appears in this pasuk not once, not twice, but thrice. And each one is going to have to teach me another din. Toshma, Beged Shetzvao. Beklipe Arla. Now let's understand. There are two ways of taking a tree and converting it into dye. One is to take the bark of the tree, and the other is to take the covering over the fruits. If a fruit has a hard covering, like for example nuts, right? Egozim have a very hard klipa. You can actually convert that klipa into a tseva. The Mishnah in the third parak of Orla establishes that if you take the bark of a tree, even though this tree is a very young sapling, it's in the first 3 years, and you convert that bark into dye, that's not Orla. Because Orla only applies, as the pasuk says, v'araltem espirio. However, the klipa, and this is a chiddush, the klipa of a pri of Arla also has the same status as the pri itself. And it's Arla, which means it's Asr Bano. We're going to derive the Isra Ano from the repetition of the word Arla in this pasuk. Now, what happens if a person went ahead and he violated this prohibition? He took Arla and he stripped the fruit of its klipa. He took the klipa and converted it into a tseva, and he used the tseva, which he's not allowed to use. That's called iser ano. And what do you do with this, wool or garment that now has in it the coloring of Allah? What would have been your intuitive knee-jerk reaction? I would say there's no problem. Wear the beged and enjoy it. Why? Because you're not benefiting from the arla itself. You're benefiting from the dye of the arla. But that should depend upon how we view the dye of the arla. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, yidolek. And the Gemara says, why? Why do you have to set aflame this beged? You can't enjoy any benefits from the beged. And the answer is because Alva, we see Chazusa Milsahi, that the appearance, so to speak, of the color from this dye is considered be'en. It's considered as if the original Arla is there. I mean, this is according to Rashi, this is identical with the principle that we had before of Yesh Shvach Samamonim Bitsemer. Now we have to keep in mind that we have to burn this beged, and the reason for that is because Arla is called Nisrafim. There's a Mishnah in Tmura which classifies two different types of Isuri Ano. There's Nikbarim, which are buried, and there's Nisrafim. And the interesting question is where chametz fits in, because Rav Yehuda is of the opinion ein bir chametz ala sreifa, so that makes it into the srafim. So the Torah has a whole chiddush that even according to Rav Yehuda, basically chametz is nikbar, even though the only way of fulfilling the mitzvah of tashbisu is by burning the chametz. So why is that called nikbar? Okay, that's, if you're ever interested in that, that could be good for a 9 o'clock shiur actually. It's a beautiful chiddush of Rav Chaim on that. So the Gemara says the following. Alma chazusa milsahi, meaning there's no way, no how that you can tell me that the beged itself is osur by noah b'toris arla and it has to be burnt. If you're telling me that the tseva itself is nothing more than an appearance, but it's not a dover be'en. If there's no be'en over here, then the beged itself has no status as arla. The status of the beged as arla, requiring the beged to be burnt, must be because the klipe arla and the tseva that comes from the klipe arla is still intact, right? It's be'en. And if it's be'en, then he's being nene from peros arla if he wears that beged. So therefore, it's nisrafin. So the Gemara wants to use arla as our proof text to establish that the samamonim still exist, albeit in a different form, in the beged itself. Omar Rav, no. Hanoa hanira le'naim osra Torah. Now this is a little bit strange. I mean, I thought that Rava should have said, Omar Rava, shiny Arla. Arla is different. That's what I was hoping for. That Arla has its own set of regulations and you can't use it as a binyanav. But Rava's formulation, if you're careful about it, is a little bit different. He says, Hanoa nira le'naim osra Torah. And this reminds me of the Gemara about Reach, you know, whether Reach is considered a Dovah Sheish Bo Mamish or it's not a Dovah Sheish Bo Mamish, or the Gemara asks about Re'iyah. Do you remember the sugya about the people who had to fix the Kodesh Kadoshim, that they used to let them down in a pulley system, you know, in a box, so that they wouldn't be nene from the Re'iyah, the amazing sight of the Kodesh Kadoshim? That's Gemara Pesachim, Daf Chofei, I think. In any event, the Gemara there goes back and forth whether Re'iyah, meaning if I have a sensual pleasure that's not either eating, drinking, or smearing something on my body, it's just seeing something, is that called a Dover Sheish Bar Mamish? Does it constitute a violation of Isuri Anah? That's called Mare Nayim. So Rava wants to point out that under the classical laws that regulate Isuri Anah, Re'iyah Sainayim would not be considered a violation of Isur Anah. And that case of Kodesh Kadoshim has something to do with the status of Hegdesh, which is a special unique status. But in general, as far as the Isuri Anah is concerned, then unless you're getting some sort of sensual pleasure from the object, you're only just benefiting from its vision or its appearance, that's not considered a Dover Sheish Bo Mamish. And therefore, says Rava, Li'olam, I can really argue that Ein shvach samamonim b'tzemer. There is no tangible arla over here, right? The arla is gone. What's left, however, is enjoying the beauty of the sight of arla. That's called hanoa nirolainayim. Now, how does Rava know that the definition of hanoa with regard to arla is a broad scope definition that includes even hanoa nirolainayim? Kirsanya, because he learns it from a braisa. Arelim lo ye ochel, ein li elo iser achila. The Gemara is completely oblivious to the fact that it says lo ye ochel, as if it said lo yochal, and that only tells me you're not allowed to eat the fruits of arla. How do we know that you're not allowed to benefit? Let's say you can't sell it to a guy or give it to a guy as a gift, even, because that's called tovas hanoa. Minayin shel ye'enu mimenu. That's number one. So we need number one, a ribui for Iser Hanna. Number two, Vilo Yitzpabo. We need a separate ribui, an extra word, Arla in the Pasuk. Because again, Arla appears three times. To include even dying. Vilo Yadlik Bo Eshaner. Right? He takes the olives of Arla on the first 3 years and he converts them into oil and he burns the oil. In each one of these three cases, we have a new chiddush. In the first category, the chiddush is that you're not eating the arla. In the second category, the chiddush is that even the appearance of the arla in the form of tzeva is also considered a benefit from the oral. And the third chiddush is that even though perhaps the oral is going up in smoke, right, combustibility, and that's called kilui achefetz, so the chefetz simultaneously with this benefit that you're getting from is self-destroyed, it doesn't exist anymore. So how can you say that your hanah relates to arla? The arla is no longer, because that part that's giving light and fire, etc., is no longer, it's gone. So for this we need three times arla. Tamalomer varaltim arlasa spilya relim lo yeyachem, right? 1, 2, 3. L'rabos is kula. So we now have a ribi for all three. So where does Rava base his conclusion that Orla has a new definition of Hano, which it includes something that really is not benefiting from the physical object? So he might see this in the case of Lo Yadlik Bo Esaner. What do you gain from burning the shemen of Orla? You get light. But light is something that's abstract. It's Nirale Nayim, but it's not Hano Migufo Shel Chefetz. And if that be the case, that justifies why in the case of Tseva, even if I maintain to you Chazusa Lav Milsa, and Ein Shvach Samamonim Bitsemer, but nevertheless you're getting benefit from the appearance of something, that's called Hano Hanira Laina. Okay, Rabosai, so in any event, the bottom line is that your analogy to Orla is not a fair enough. Right, that the definition of Hano and Orla is unique. Like that's what I meant to say. So Orla is not a rule, but rather the exception to the rule. So from the perspective of Hano universally, then Tseva would not be considered Hano. But from the perspective of Dovar Hanir Leinayim, it's called Hano. Okay, so we got that.